Good evening. This is Life Rattle, the story show. I'm your host, Lori Callis. Tonight, on Life Rattle number 1224, we present three stories from new Life Rattle writer, Michelle Catherine Duclos. Michelle Catherine Duclos was born in Toronto in 1991 and raised in the suburbs along with her two younger siblings. Duclos spent her high school years tutoring English, working at a veterinary hospital, and advocating for mental health awareness through an anti-bullying campaign. In university, where she studied politics and writing, Duclos wrote for the sports section of her campus newspaper. She also wrote and designed advertisements and publications for her job at a charity. After graduating from university, she will pursue a career in publishing and editing. Michelle Duclos enjoys reading, philosophy, skating outdoors, swimming in Georgian Bay, and watching the Olympics. With fresh, bright writing, Michelle depicts three generations of a family coping with the failing health of their grandfather, Jedek in Polish. With a wonderful juxtaposition of youth and old age, humor and sadness, and some ironic twists, these stories are both very touching and frighteningly relevant to all families. Tonight's first story introduces us to the family, as our young narrator quietly observes the paramedics who rush her Jedek to the hospital. Let's listen now as Michelle Catherine Duclos reads her story, 911, tonight on Life Rattle.
911 by Michelle Catherine Duclos. I sit curled up on a brown sofa in the TV room. I watch our old TV set as the screen flickers. Something plays. I don't notice. Uncle Stan talks on the phone to a 911 operator. He's been on the phone for the past 10 minutes. Jedek, my grandfather, isn't breathing properly. Shallow, shallow breaths, I overhear Uncle Stan say. I want to rush over and look at Jedek. I want to know what's going on. But Mom insists my siblings and I sit in the TV room. Watch some TV, she suggested 5 minutes ago. I can't. All I can think about is Jedek. I saw him an hour ago, lying on his bed, the bed that Bupcha, my grandmother, made for him. She dragged the metal frame up the stairs from the basement by herself. She built the plywood base by herself. She carried the mattress from the garage by herself. One day, when we came to visit from our home in Mississauga, the bed sat in her bedroom, as though it had always been there. Now Jedek lies in the bed. His once vibrant face is now pallid and his eyes seem empty. He still has a full head of hair, but his once gray hairs quickly turned white just a few months ago. Jedek suffers from dementia. It's a terrible disease. It's robbed him of the ability to communicate. We don't know what he's thinking because he can't tell us. He's forgotten how to write, so we can't communicate that way either. Jedek's body lies in that bed, but his mind and his personality are buried. I hear sirens outside. I wonder if they're coming for Jedek. My sister Elizabeth tugs on my arm. She's 12, but it doesn't feel that way sometimes. Today she acts like a 5-year-old. Is Jedek going to be okay? I don't know, I say. They won't let me go into the other room and see him. I'm only 2 years older than Elizabeth. To her, I'm a sage. Pouting, my 10-year-old brother Daniel rests his head on the edge of the couch. His index finger presses the red channel button on the remote control. 25, 26, 27. I hear movement in the kitchen. I turn my head. Three paramedics stand beside Uncle Stan. Their dark blue uniforms contrast with the pristine white walls of Bupcha's kitchen. Their shiny black boots thump on the new hardwood floor. The paramedic closest to the TV room turns his head and looks at us. He smiles sadly. He rubs his balding head and turns to Uncle Stan. I strain to hear through the closed TV room door. I catch garbled words from their conversation. Taking him to emergency. Difficulty breathing. Pneumonia. Bring a stretcher. The paramedics wheel in a stretcher, navigating the tight corners in the kitchen. They push the stretcher into Judik's room. They disappear to load Judik onto the stretcher. Minutes later, the paramedics wheel Judik out. He looks tiny on the stretcher's large orange mattress. Black stamped letters spell City of Toronto along the side of the mattress. Someone, most likely Bupcha, wrapped Judik up in a heavy blue blanket. Only his face peeps out. I see his head for only a few seconds. A female paramedic holds a blue bag over Judik's mouth and blocks my view. She pumps air into his lungs. Mom rushes into the TV room. Her usually calm face scrunches up in anxiety. Bupcha's traveling with Judik to the hospital, she says. I'm going to walk there with Uncle Stan. You guys stay here, okay? Dad should be here in half an hour. I nod. Dad stayed home today to get yard work done. Mom called him 2 minutes ago. Mom shuts the door of the TV room. The door thunders as she closes it. She talks quietly to Uncle Stan. I can't hear what they say.
That was Michelle Catherine Duclos reading her story 911. Tonight's second story brings us to the hospital where Judik is ailing. From outside of the hospital room, where all the adult members of their family have gathered around Judik, our young narrator and her two younger siblings fearfully observe the rituals of the visiting priest. Let's listen now as Michelle Catherine Duclos reads her story, Extreme Unction.
Extreme Unction by Michelle Catherine Duclos. I sit on a hard gray chair beside Judik's room at St. Joseph's Health Center in Toronto. Elizabeth and Daniel sit slumped beside me. The tiny clock mounted on the white wall reads 1:30. I watch a nurse jog down the hallway with a clipboard under her arm. Her brown hair bounces in a ponytail at the nape of her neck. She stops at the end of the hallway and enters a room. I close my eyes. I smell bleach, medicine, blood, sweat, and hand sanitizer. I don't like it here. Hospitals scare me. I hear footsteps at my left. I open my eyes. It's the priest from St. Casimir's, Bupcha's church. He holds a black briefcase in his right hand. Father John smiles quickly at us, but I can see the sorrow in his eyes. He thinks what everyone else thinks. Judik is dying. He adjusts his Roman collar, puts down the briefcase, takes off his black jacket, slings it over his left arm, picks up the briefcase, and enters Judik's room. I lean over and peek inside. Everyone's there. Mom, Dad, Bupcha, Judik, Uncle Stan, and Father John. Everyone but Elizabeth, Daniel, and me. Mom said it was fine for us to sit outside Judik's room. We're too scared to go inside. I don't want to see a dying person, especially Judik. The only dead person I ever saw was just a few months ago. She was an old family friend of ours, Mrs. Vyshishkevich. She looked scary, I remember. Like she could wake up at any moment. That frightened me. What if she woke up after they buried her? That worry comes to mind now. I don't want to see Judik die. I love him. He used to run and chase Elizabeth, Daniel, and me in the backyard. That was before he got sick, though. I look back into the hospital room. Father John holds a red book in his left hand. He recites a prayer. Bupcha searches her sweater pockets for a handkerchief. She eventually finds a piece of cloth in her left pocket. She blows her nose and wipes her eyes. Mom grabs a tissue from a box screwed into the wall and dabs at her eyes. She's crying too. I try not to think about what's going on. I try to convince myself that I'm too young to know. After all, I'm just 14. But no matter what I think, I know that I understand what's going on, and it scares me. Father John takes a small jar out of his briefcase. He dips his fingers into the oil-filled jar and crosses Judek's hands and forehead. Judek's eyes open. He looks around the room. Then he closes them. Mom walks out of Judek's hospital room. Father John left a few minutes ago. Mom and Bubja have been sitting beside Judek watching him. Dad and Uncle Stan went to get us food. "Did you understand what Father John was doing?" Mom asks me. I shake my head. No. It's called the Sacrament of the Sick. It used to only be performed on people who were on their deathbeds. That's when people called it extreme unction. I wrinkled my nose. Extreme unction? That sounds like a torture or something. Well, now it's called the Sacrament of the Sick, and it's performed on anyone who's sick. Like Judek, I comment. Yeah, like Judek, Mom repeats. Mom, is Judek going to die? Elizabeth blurts out. I turn and stare at her. I want to know too, but Elizabeth sure has a blunt way of asking. Mom looks down at the hospital floor. Eventually, yes. Hopefully not for a while, though. But he's not going to die today, is he? She continues. I don't know, Mom replies. She turns around and walks back into Jedek's room. She sits down beside Bapcha and puts her hand on Bapcha's shoulder.
That was Michelle Catherine Duclos reading her story, Extreme Unction. Tonight's final story brings us to the healthcare center where Judek, who suffers from dementia as well as physical health problems, is being cared for. Our narrator and her younger siblings discover some differences between their Polish culture and the Jewish culture they encounter at the center. Let's listen now as Michelle Catherine Duclos reads her story, Baycrest.
Baycrest, by Michelle Catherine Duclos. I push my body up another flight of stairs. It's Saturday. I'm visiting Judek with Mom, Dad, Elizabeth, and Daniel, the entire family. It's our first visit with Judek at Baycrest. St. Joseph's Health Center transferred Judek to Baycrest, one of the best rehabilitation hospitals for the elderly in Toronto, after his medical treatment. My calves burn from the stair climbing, but it's worth it. Anything is better than taking the elevator. I have a fear of elevators. They scare me. I got stuck in an elevator once. I haven't liked them since. I reach the top flight of stairs and yank open a green metal door. Shuffling to a yellow wall across from the elevator, I lean against it and try to look like I'm not out of breath. Seconds later, the elevator doors open. Mom, Dad, Elizabeth, and Daniel pile out. Ugh, next time we should all take the stairs, Elizabeth says. I don't know if I can stand another day of waiting on every floor while the elevator doors open and close. Mommy, why does the elevator stop on every floor? Daniel asks, on the way to Judek's unit. This is a Jewish facility. Orthodox Jews aren't allowed to do any work on Saturdays. It's their Sabbath. Mom explains. Daniel shrugs. That doesn't make any sense. Pressing buttons counts as work, I chime in. The elevator is programmed to stop at every floor on Saturdays only. Dad pulls the door open to the unit. Inside, a white-haired woman sleeps in a geriatric chair. Her head rests against the thick purple straps that line the top portion of the chair. A long green marble counter snakes around the middle of the room, separating the nurse's station from the rest of the room. I spot Judek's room in the far corner. He sits in a jury chair just outside his room. I wave to Judek. He frowns. We all crowd around Jevic. We hug and kiss him while he pushes us away. Mom always said he never enjoyed affection. I push my way around my family and walk into Jevic's room. It's a nice room. Two windows in the corner intersect perpendicularly and form a point. A mounted wooden seat sits at the base. Blue and yellow pillows lean against the cold windows. I press my hand to one of the windows, and I see condensation form around my hand. Jevic's bed sits on the other side of the room. Two thick blue mattresses lie on both sides of the bed. I guess they're in case Jevic falls out of bed or tries to get up in the middle of the night. A blue plastic curtain hangs beside Jevic's bed. I look up. A thin line of rollers runs the length of the room, mounted to the ceiling by tiny silver screws. It splits the room in half. Daniel stumbles into the room and looks at the window seat. "Cool," he exclaims and rushes over. "Hey, Michelle, take a look." There's some men dressed in long black coats with black hats. Daniel wrinkles his nose. They look weird. I look out the window. Four men walk down the street towards Baycrest. Each is dressed in a long black overcoat, and each wears a black top hat. All the men have long, dark beards. "Those are Hasidic Jews," I explain to Daniel. "They dress that way as part of their religion." "Oh," Daniel frowns. "Hey!" I hear Jevic yell from the hallway. From the narrow view of Jevic's door, I see the white-haired woman in the Jerry chair wake up and scream. Then she laughs hysterically. I give Daniel a weird look. I walk over to the door and lean against the oak frame. One of the nurses comes over and calls out to Mom. "Jane Dobry," she says. I see a mouthful of white pearly teeth. The creases in the corner of her eyes tighten as she smiles widely. "Dzień dobry to you too," Mom laughs. "What a surprise. I didn't know that anyone here spoke Polish." "We're trying," the nurse says. She scratches her black hair with the edge of her brown clipboard. I squint and make out the name Mary on her name tag. "Your father seems to understand when we speak Polish. Would you mind writing up a gloss for us? We'd really like to pronounce the words properly." "That's a great idea," Mom agrees. "We'll be bringing up the food in about 2 minutes. Would you like to feed your father in his room?" Mary asks. "Yes, I think we will," Mom says. Dad grabs the back of Jevic's wheelchair and pushes him into his room. Mary brings the lunch tray into the room. Mom lifts the thick white plastic lid off the tray. Underneath are three compartments. In the first compartment, I see brown mush. In the second compartment, I see yellow mush. And in the third, white mush. All of Jevic's food has been pureed. "Ugh, what is that?" Elizabeth looks at the food in horror. Mom waves it off. "It's good food," she says. "Bub just said so." "But they do this thing here where the meat and the dairy are separate. Jews don't eat meat with dairy. It's one of the rules of their religion. That's why they have all his food in separate compartments. If they add milk to his potatoes, they can't mix the potatoes with the meat." "I would never survive here," Daniel says gravely. His favorite food is mashed potatoes with gravy and meatballs. He would eat meatballs and potatoes every day if Mom let him. "Hey!" Jevic yells for a second time. None of us expect it, and we all jump. "I guess Jevic's hungry," Elizabeth giggles.
That was Michelle Catherine Duclos reading her story, Baycrest. That concludes Life Rattle number 1224. My name is Lori Callis. I recorded Michelle reading her stories. Life Rattle was created by Guy Allen and Arnie Actman. Tune into Life Rattle next Sunday night at 9 to hear three more new stories from Michelle Catherine Duclos.